Ain't no power in this land that can ever, ever take you from my hand. That can ever, ever take you from my hand. Ain't no obstacle.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Napa. This is Tia Butts here with Farmers Fresh Hour and my co-host.
And this is Greg Cole from the Napa Farmers Market.
Wonderful. Well, welcome to our show. We would like to thank our sponsors, American Ag Credit Money for Agriculture. Here on Farmers Fresh Hour, we hear the stories behind the farms and the food and our artisans at the farmers market. And we're with the Napa Farmers Market this week.
Right. We try to enlighten everybody every other week. We're here every other Thursday from 10 to 11. That's right. Yeah.
That's right. That's correct.
That is correct.
It's early. We're still working on coffee.
That's when we're here. And just as we entered the show, that little sound bit you heard was one of our bands that plays at the market, a band called Run With Patience, and that was one of their songs, Unbreakable. And I think, are they going to be there this Saturday?
They are. They will be there this Saturday.
And they're really, really good. So if you are in town, and you should be in town on Saturday, we want you to come down to our Napa Farmers Market and enjoy all of our vendors, our farmers, our food producers, our handicrafters, and we have live music thanks to our friends at KVYN.
Yes, the sister station.
KVO and KVYN, but they're our music sponsor, and we want to thank them for helping us bring music to you at the market.
Well, welcome back. You know, it's been a few weeks since we've been together.
It's been, I think, six. I don't know if it's been 6 weeks. Yeah, we kicked off the show, then I left, then you left, and now we're back together.
Oh, I missed you, Greg. I missed you.
Well, I've seen you since then, but our listeners haven't enjoyed our delightful banter, I like to call it. So that's where we are.
Well, today our show is really, Labor Day is coming, and so this is really about labors of love. Some of the food producers that we have on today really put a lot of hard work and effort into making their goods, and you want to tell us a little bit about who's going to be here today, Greg?
We're going to be joined first by Kyle Keener from Royal Artisan Breads. He's a local bread baker, works out of his home kitchen and makes amazing breads that you could find at the market on Tuesdays and Saturdays. Following Kyle, we're going to have Donna Pacheco from Ashadina Cheese Company, which is located, small family-owned cheese operation dairy located just a little bit southwest of the town of Petaluma. And then finally, a good friend of mine and a friend of the valley, Chef Kelly McDonald, is going to be joining us in studio to talk about his demo that will be in a couple weeks. It's not this Saturday. This Saturday, you're stuck with me. So if you're out there.
We don't mind that.
And I don't know what I'm going to make yet, but I'm going to figure it out. I've been camping this last couple of days, and I was hoping to get inspiration on the Sonoma Coast, but it didn't quite happen. Although I had a good time.
Oh, that's fantastic. What'd you make while you were camping?
I stopped at the market in Sonoma Market and got a delicious Piedmontese New York steak. Ooh. And I cooked that with some potatoes and onions and serrano peppers, and it was very good. And I went by myself. My wife's not a camper. She doesn't love doing that. And the kids are gone. They're off at college. So I just went off by myself, and it was the best time. I had so much fun by myself. I'm very entertaining. And I wanted to go fish.
I'm just envisioning you sitting around the campfire having conversations.
Well, and so the funny fishing stories. I wanted to go fishing. I wanted to go surf casting off of the coast. And so I stopped and got some squid. I got my fishing gear all together. I went out to the coast. I threw my line out. Within a minute, I caught a beautiful greenling. It's a small little rockfish.
Yeah.
Brought it in. I'm thinking, I want to fish for a couple hours, and when you're rock fishing, you can't really fit the fish back in the water because it's way down below, and it's kind of treacherous on those rocks. So I thought, I'm not gonna keep this one. I'll throw this one back in. And I'll catch some more. That was the only fish I caught.
Oh no!
Luckily, I took a picture of it, so I have photographic
proof
with my shoe next to the fish. So there's proof that I actually did catch it. But it was so funny because after that, all I caught was kelp. I caught a lot of kelp.
Well, that was the one that got away.
That was the one. So anyway, this Saturday is going to be me. A week from Saturday, Kelly McDonald will be doing a demo. And Kelly is going to be doing a cambazola cheese crusted in sweet potatoes and pan fried. Kind of a little play on baked brie. It was so popular in the late 70s, early 80s. Every dinner party that yes. happened to have a copy of the Silver Palette Cookbook would take their apricot jam, spread it on some brie, wrap it in pastry, and then bake it. And so Kelly's got a little take on that using local cambazola with wrapped in sweet potatoes. So it should be good. And he is great. Kelly was on the wine train for 20 years and has his own catering company now, and is a fantastic guy, local celebrity. So anyway, it should be a good demo this Saturday. Hopefully mine will be fine, and then I'm sure next Saturday's is going to be great.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, you cannot do brie cheese without bread, and I'd like to take a moment to welcome one of our guests who's already here with us in studio, Kyle. Hello, Royal Artisan Breads. We're glad you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into your story, though, I have a bit of a little story myself that I want to share with each of you that I thought was fascinating. There was a story in the news, and it was actually in a British newspaper, I think about a month ago. And it was interesting because they have discovered after what they believe is to be the world's oldest loaf of bread. So the remains of a charred flatbread were found at an archaeological site in Jordan dating back 14,400 years by a team of researchers, including experts from the University College London and University of Cambridge. It's the oldest direct evidence of bread found to date. And it predates the advent of agriculture by about 4,000 years, which I thought was also really interesting. So I think they said the remains of the bread showed that wild ancestors of domesticated cereals such as barley and oat had been ground and, you know, kneaded and formed into a bread. So they believe this was because it was so labor intensive, especially then, I would think that
they didn't have mixers.
No, that this was probably a special occasion kind of thing. But they said their next step is to evaluate if the production and consumption of bread influenced the emergence of plant cultivation, because their only evidence of plant cultivation and agriculture came much later. Anyway, I thought that was kind of fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, really cool. So obviously things have come a long way since then.
We now have all kinds of fabulous breads.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we're spoiled.
And so, you know, tell us how you got into bread making, because I understand you haven't always been working with your hands in the same way.
No, not exactly. I was a teacher, actually. I was managing the academic department at a private English school in San Francisco for about 5 years. And I really love teaching. I love being in front of a class and teaching, but I was more just sitting behind a desk and managing people and students and things like that. And I was growing tired of the work, and I wasn't really feeling motivated by what I was doing. And one of my teachers had been bringing in loaves of bread that he had been making at home and was sharing them with the staff and everything. And so I kind of got into it through that and started home baking by myself. Did a lot of reading, a lot of research on my own, and then kind of came to this crossroads where I wasn't happy with work and I wasn't really doing what I wanted to do. I wanted to learn a craft and work with my hands. And so I decided to go for it and quit my job and decided to pursue becoming a bread baker for real. So I did a couple stages around some bakeries in San Francisco, and then landed a dream job at Firebrand Artisan Breads in Oakland. And that's where I kind of got my start and learned everything from how to work in a bakery, in a production kitchen, everything from packing the bread to mixing the dough to shaping to then eventually baking. And I was there for about three and a half years. And then my wife and I moved up here to beautiful Napa. I worked at Model here in town for a little bit. Oh, okay. And then just the beginning of this year, I decided to go for it and do my own operation, which has been my goal from when I first started to eventually get at a place where I felt comfortable doing it on my own. So, yeah, and then I just started getting going with the farmers market this year. And it's been, I couldn't ask for a better situation and welcoming from the farmers market and from from the community. It's been really nice.
Well, thank you. We're happy to hear that. And your products are certainly very, very popular.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, they are indeed. And one of the great things about the farmers market, and I don't know what this year is for the Napa farmers market. It's been going on for, I think, 28 years plus. But it's a great incubator for small businesses like your own. And so, you know, over the years, bakeries have started up, been a member of the market. They got to the point where they get their own brick and mortar establishment. They're staffing in their own place. And, you know, they don't always have time or staff to get to the market. You know, we've seen that with Alexis Baking Company and Sweetie Pie's Bakery, both great places, got a start working at the market, created a retail presence, and then just grew and grew and grew. And it's so exciting to see their success. And then, you know, what happens then is small new bakers like yourself come in and fill those spots. And we provide a great venue for you to meet retail clients, to sort of build your repertoire and your client base. But they also get to meet you, talk to you, you know, get caught up in your passion about the bread. And it's really exciting. And it's great. We do a lot of great things to the market, of course, but one is giving farmers a retail avenue for their products. But for someone like you, you know, just starting out, trying to lease a space and have a commercial presence, it would be cost prohibitive. But to have a stall at the market a couple of days a week gets you sort of your foot in the door. It helps small businesses develop. It's really a great thing. And plus, you know, our shoppers get to come and meet you and enjoy your bread.
Well, and speaking of the bread, let's get into it. You know, so baking, as I said, is quite labor intensive, I guess, from my perspective. And you can tell me how physical, or tell us how physical it really is. But I noticed that you chose to do sourdough. I believe all of your breads have some sourdough starter in them. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. All the breads I do are naturally leavened sourdough breads. So the leavening agent is flour and water mixed together. So there's no commercial yeast that I use in the breads that I do. Not that I'm against using it. Some breads call for it, but the breads that I'm doing currently are all naturally leavened. So ingredient list is flour, water, and salt.
So very, very simple.
Exactly.
Yet turn into complex things.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like the kind of adage, you know, simplicity equals kind of sophistication, right? So you're kind of manipulating these basic ingredients to try to coax out the flavor that you're looking for, or the crust that you're looking for. So in that sense, it's nothing really new. Like you just described that bread that is
ancient bread.
Yeah, exactly. Which must
the oldest bread box in the world right. That they just discovered.
That you won't find at our market, but it's out there.
Which was sourdough bread, right? And just flour, water, and that was probably it that made it work. So, and that's what kind of interests me at the moment right now is kind of working with a lot of whole grains that I can incorporate it for not just flavor, but also for health benefits as well.
Do you ever get a fermentation that gets stuck, or I mean a leavening process because of the wild yeast, or do they always go through?
Absolutely. I mean, every day is different. That's also part of the intrigue of working with sourdough. You're working with, as you said, a living culture. So each day is going to be different depending on the temperature. Temperature and time you have to think of as a bread baker, as ingredients.
Right.
So sure, there's going to be days where, you know, you mix your starter and you think, maybe I should have made the water a little warmer. It's a little slower. So you kind of have to react to each process as you're going.
I remember at the beginning of the market this year, I think I bought a loaf of bread from you, and I had never heard of just a simple wild yeast fermentation or bread baking. And, you know, it's very synonymous what happens in the wine industry where, I don't know, 25 years ago, Franciscans started their Cuvée Sauvage, this wild yeast fermented wine. And I thought, that's crazy. I mean, they're just letting that thing go. And then, of course, now, you know, wild yeast fermented wines are, they're not the norm, but they're very common.
Much more common.
Yeah, and it's acceptable. But it's acceptable, although 100 years ago, that's how they all happened. There wasn't strains of wine yeast or bread yeast or those kinds of things. People relied on starters, like sourdough starters, or just the spores, the yeast spores that are occurring naturally in the air or in the vineyard. And so you create sort of a sense of place because the yeast and that fermentation is happening with these yeast strains that are free in our air or in our you know, in our vineyards. It's really neat. I mean, I just know when I worked in wine production, sometimes we would do that, and we'd get a barrel that was stuck, you know, for whatever reason. Three barrels went through, one barrel just it didn't. So you get the electric blanket and you warm up the barrel and you do all these little tricks,
right, exactly,
to try to coax it along. And yeah, so you occasionally will run into this.
Same. It can be temperamental, you know. But then that's where kind of the baker's intuition or
right,
the winemaker's intuition kind of has to come into play, and you have to react to the bread or the
right,
dough or what you're working with. But also, like you said, it does give you a sense of place, right? Because there's really nothing more local than the wild yeast that are coming from the
right,
air or your environment or your hands or the flour.
So I'm curious, how long does it take you, given that you're working with starters and bread needs to rise often and all of those things, you know, every week when you're coming to the market, what kind of planning goes into that, and how long does it take you to make that week's batch of bread?
Right, yeah, a tremendous amount of planning, because it's, you have to be on a schedule too, right? So if I need to have all my bread ready for Saturday morning at the market, I need to then work backwards and start my schedule. So I'm starting Thursday evening, essentially mixing my starters, taking it from a small amount of starter and then building it up to the amount that I need to leaven 100 to 120 loaves of bread that I'm going to bring to the market that day. So I'll start Thursday evening, mixing starters, wake up Friday morning at about 6, and then start again more mixing, and then work all day Friday until I'll finish up about Friday about 2:30 in the morning.
Wow.
Grab a couple hours of sleep, pack up, and head
come
on
to the
market.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But I couldn't ask for anything better. It's,
yeah,
that's the best part of the day is, you know, all the bread's baked, it's on the shelf, it's cooling.
The house smells good.
The house smells great. To me, it smells absolutely,
yeah, I think,
wonderful.
There's almost nothing better than the smell of fresh baked bread.
Oh my gosh.
I was a kid, my mom used to bake bread, and I just love that
like
smell.
Home.
It does.
It's like very comforting and cozy.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Your house must smell really good.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I'm sure maybe my wife would like me to find a space to maybe I can expand production,
right,
but I'm sure she's not complaining about
the smell of the house. That's the beauty of I think the market and the way you're starting this business is this season, yes, you do it this way. And then maybe in 2 years, production ramps up, you've got some wholesale accounts or some restaurants that want to have your bread, you know, and you need a little more room, but you have now the opportunity to sort of build your business slowly and organically.
Well, yes. And so let's talk about a few of the breads, because I'm looking at the time and I feel like we could talk. I literally could talk to you all day. I have so many more unanswered questions. You'll have to come back. But we do have our cheese person calling in here shortly. So, yeah, walk us through some of your breads. You've got several different styles.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to say what the favorite is, but I think the whole wheat sour that I do has become a popular one among customers. So the whole wheat sour is made with about 90% whole wheat flour. And actually recently I started stone milling the flour myself at home. So I'll buy the whole grain wheat, which is grown in California. I buy it from Central Milling in Petaluma. And then I'll get the bag of the whole grain. I have a small little mill that actually a neighbor gave to me, which was incredibly kind of her. And I've started milling the flour myself so that it's as fresh as possible. So I'll mill that today. I'll go home, mill my flour. Tomorrow, mix it into the dough. And then Friday night, bake it. So you're getting essentially like if you're coffee drinkers, you're, you know, grinding your own coffee. And it's going to be that much more fresh, a lot of great nutrients in it. So the whole wheat sour is made with now freshly milled whole wheat flour, which
wow,
I'm really excited about. Yeah.
Does that require a special machine? Like
it does. Yeah. It's it's just the mill that I was gifted to by my neighbor must be about 30, 35 years old. It's an ancient thing, but it's
wow,
it's got a little tiny stone circles in there that I pour the grain in through the top, goes through, mills it out, and then comes out in whole grain flour. And it's as fresh as possible rather than being
right,
milled, you know, weeks or a month before or prior. So I'm really happy with that bread, the whole wheat. And then I have that same dough that I add toasted pecans and golden raisins to, which In my
Which
opinion,
sounds delicious right now with my chai tea. I would love some of that. Yeah,
and with the your cheese guest coming in, a nice soft cheese spread on
there is perfect.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And then the royal sour is my kind of traditional sourdough. It's a blend of bread flour and a smaller percentage of whole wheat and a little bit of whole rye. And again, all these breads are naturally leavened with sourdough starters. So I have a couple different sourdough starters. I have a whole wheat starter and then a whole rye starter.
That's interesting. I was going to ask you this, so I'm glad you're talking about this. Yeah.
So I'll blend the two in different ratios or percentages to get the kind of flavor that I'm looking for. To benefit the bread, the end product. Yeah.
Wow, that is so fascinating.
It is really incredible. Yeah, and just for our listeners, just have if you have an opportunity to come to the market this Saturday or next Tuesday or any time throughout the season, just to meet you, to talk to you about your bread, your knowledge, your passion for it. That's amazing. You're grinding your own.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's actually part of the reason I love doing the market too, is just meeting all the people, the wonderful people that are coming up and getting bread and continuing to come back and back. It's been a great welcome from the community, so I really appreciate that.
And it is, I just know from the restaurant business, it's so great to make something with your hands and then have people go and enjoy it, and just love that. So we're gonna wrap that up with a baker, owner of Royal Artisan Breads, Kyle Keener. You could find him at the market this Saturday. And we're going to see if we have our friend Donna Pacheco from Ashadino Cheese on the phone.
Well, let's take a quick break and we'll grab her call. So,
okay.
All right,
very good.
We'll be back shortly.
Welcome back, KVON listeners. This is Greg Cole, and this is my co-host,
Tia Butts.
It's Tia Butts, and we think on the line we have Donna Pacheco from Ashadia Cheese Company. Are you there? Hello.
Hello, Donna. Oh wait,
you.
Here we go. There you are.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Sorry about that. We're new at these buttons that we're pushing here. Thank you so much for calling in at the designated time. We appreciate that. And I'm Greg Cole. This is Tia, who you've been speaking with, and we're excited to hear more about your cheese company. I was over on the Sonoma Coast yesterday, so I drove nearby. I know you're a small farm just southwest of Petaluma.
About 3 miles from downtown Petaluma.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourselves. I understand you are three generations back in cheese.
Well, my father and my husband is a third generation dairyman on both sides of his family. And so just, the natural progression of sustaining a family farm is what's next. And so for us, that's where we ventured into goats and grapes and trucks and all of those things, and then gradually into cheese.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, I understand that there is a story behind the Ashadina name. Can you tell us what that is?
Pretty important to my husband. It's my husband's contribution to his dad. His dad is from the town of Ashadina in Portugal.
Oh, wow, fantastic. So this is family history. And were his that generation of family in Portugal, were they also cheesemakers?
My mother-in-law has cheesemakers on her side of the family in Portugal, but I'm not sure what town it was from. So there is a little history in there, and the few things that they told me I absolutely had to do were kind of illegal here.
That's okay. Your secret's safe with
That's
us,
right.
and just a few listeners listening.
Those are those Portuguese secrets.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
So, I tried to explain to him that we couldn't do it, and he just shared with me how stupid I was.
Yeah. Well, I visited Portugal last summer for a couple weeks, and the Portuguese people have an incredible love of food and wine and cheese and oils, and they're also fiercely proud of making their own. When you go into a Portuguese restaurant, in Portugal. Pretty much everything on the menu is from Portugal, whether it's the fish or the cheese or the wine or the olive oil. It's all from right there. So it's a culture that's steeped in producing great foods.
Right. Yeah, everything they do, there's a tremendous amount of pride that's involved. Absolutely.
So Donna, you know, you've been in Petaluma for quite some time, and you mentioned you have, you know, beef cows and sheep and horses and chickens and dogs and cats, etc. But I understand that you are primarily goats. So how many goats do you have and how many cows do you have?
Well, we've kind of switched gears a little bit. Our oldest son owns about 80 dairy cows, and we are actually down to about 50 dairy goats. And so we're kind of shifting gears. I hope next year to kind of gear up with our goats again. But, you know, we just kind of, we go through the motions and we work with what we have.
And what are the breeds? What kind of breeds do you use for milking?
I'd love to say that they're purebreds, but our girls are kind of mutts. With the cows, we can artificially inseminate. With goats, you have to rely on the bucks. And so it's just whatever bucks we have. But there are Alpines, Lamanja, Sonnens, Oberhasleys, Toggenbergs, and Nubians. And so the Nubians are great because they produce a higher amount of butterfat. And so that tends to be the bucks that we generally source out. And so, that's definitely kind of where our breeding is going. So they're not purebreds, but they are beautiful animals and very intelligent.
They're a proprietary blend, as you would say.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes.
A carefully planned blend of goats breeds.
That's very kind, yes.
One of the first things that I was introduced to from your dairy at the market was your butter. And I know that you make cheese and you also have the cheese curd, but then you have this amazing butter that you sell.
We've been really lucky with this. It's a heavy cultured butter, but what we are doing is we're putting kefir inside of it. And the purpose of the kefir is so that we can digest it easier. That's kind of our whole, motto is, how we feed our girls is how we can digest their product. And so in the end, all we're doing is hoping that you can digest the product better than any other product. And so,
there's a lot of people out there who are lactose intolerant now.
Absolutely.
Or have, issues with dairy. So
absolutely.
My only issue was I ended up eating so much butter. Because your butter was so good.
You started and you couldn't stop.
Yeah, I had some good bread and I had your butter. And it's like, I think we forget sometimes how good butter could be. Like really sweet cream butter, fresh from the dairy. And what you guys have at the market is just incredible.
I appreciate it. Yeah. We definitely take, pride. That pride comes in hand, so... Right.
Well, Donna, you alluded to the fact that what you feed your animals has a huge impact on the product that you're creating. And I was doing a little research before the show, and I heard it takes a lot of beer to make good cheese. They say that about wine. A lot of winemakers will say it takes a lot of beer to make great wine, but it sounds like you're doing the same motto there. Can you explain that?
Well, it's kind of sacrilegious. All my family's from Des Moines, Iowa, but we don't feed corn. Corn's been genetically modified since the 60s, and it's hard for the girls to digest it. And so what we do feed is we feed brewer's grain. We work with Bear Republic, Russian River Brewing Company, Seismic. And what we do is we take their spent grain after they're done making their beer, and it's slightly fermented. We feed it back to the girls within 24 to 48 hours.
And they probably love that, huh?
It's got a lot of nutrition in it, and it's digestible for them because of the fermentation. And so, that makes a big difference. We do pasture all year long. We feed all of our whey back, and I make my own kombucha, and I put the SCOBY from the kombucha inside the whey. It's all of these little things that we can do for them, and again, so that the ending product is easier for us to digest.
You take very good care of your girls. That's amazing.
I wasn't raised in this industry, so for me, I know that they're not pets, but I want them treated like that. Right. I want them, because how you treat them is going to be how they feel and how they produce and how they live.
Well, I understand that, you know, they all have distinct personalities, and you've named a few of your animals. Do you want to tell us about a handful of them and what they're like?
Well, I'll be nice. I won't tell you all of their names, but I have some that I'm very forthright with how I feel about them. But they are kind of the leaders of the pack. We've got Macy, and Macy tends to walk by and leave a little nose schmutz on my windows periodically. We cut and wrap a lot of our cheeses, and so they're going down to the bin to get the rinds that are supposed to be going up to the pigs. So we have some regular customers that are walking by the cheese plant. You know, we've got, we have Anna, we've got Rosie, we've got Bengal, we've got, you know, there's, and they're just, you know, not that my boys love these cows because they're really stubborn, but because they're so stubborn, they've earned those names, and you just learn to work with their personalities.
I love it. I love it. That's really, it's so nice to see the love that's going into your cheese all the way back to the animal.
When you approached the beer makers or the brewers, did you approach them? Did they come to you and say, hey, we've got this product? I mean, how did you know about going there to get this to feed this, you know, the leftovers from the brewing process?
Sure, it's been kind of a combination. You know, brewing is such a cool, trendy thing right now.
Well, and especially in Petaluma, you've got so much happening in Sonoma County, but...
Yeah, absolutely. But it's been kind of a combination. We've approached some, and some have approached us. We've just been really lucky, and we love trading with them during the holidays, and, you know, it's something that works on both sides,
right?
You know?
Well, and I worked in a brewery here in Napa years ago, and when the brewing process was finished and there was all this spent grain, you know, sort of, and it had this amazing sweet sort of smell. And I don't remember what our brewmaster did with it, but I remember but there was a lot of it, and he would haul it off, and I think he took it to a farm somewhere. I'm not sure, but you know, it's great for the brewery to have a place like your farm where they could take
the
product and it's enjoyed by the goats.
Well, it's sustainability at its best. Absolutely. All the way around, right?
It is. Well, when we started out feeding it to our beef cows, when we first got in, you know, back into the beef cows, and then the dairy girls kept getting into it. And so it's like, okay, let's work this into their feed. And we also feed brewers yeast a little bit. We did have to cut off the little girls. They are not allowed to drink the brewer's yeast because they were too intoxicated to walk in the barn.
Oh, my goodness.
So
I'm just to have this picture in my mind right now. That would be a sight.
It was funny once I figured out what was going on.
Right. They were loosening up a little bit, the girls.
Yeah, so they've been cut off.
Yeah.
So I understand that people can tour your farm or take even classes from you. Can you touch on that?
So we generally, if you check out our website, we've usually got tours and cheese making classes listed on our website. And our tours are, you know, they're $25 a person, but our tours are close to 2 hours. It's a little concerning to open up your farm to people that have never been on a farm. And so I take a lot of time explaining each and everything and why we're doing and why the dairy girls look, you know, slender and why the beef cows look so big. Those are the things that are really important. And with our cheese making classes, when I first started making cheese, my cheese was disgusting and I just didn't have somebody to kind of guide me. And so I kind of feel like I'm there, you know, giving these key points that I didn't get and hoping that, you know, people walk away with a lot more information than what they did when they started.
That's great.
That's really great. So for the shoppers at our market, you have a variety of cheeses. And so when they come up to your table at the market on Saturday, what might they be able to buy from you? Different types of cheeses. I know there's the butter, but then what else do you have?
We do fresh curds. We make fresh curds every week. With those curds, we also make brancia, which is an aged cheese. And so that's kind of cool to see the changes and what happens with aging. We do some flavored curds. We do fromage blanc. We do kefir. We have, generally, we have three flavors of kefir that we rotate every week. Oh, gosh, you know, this is when I'm going to fall flat. We have Calpretius, which is an aged cheese as well. I think that's pretty much it. But we're hoping, you know, we've got fresh and we have aged for those people that may like one or the other.
Right.
So we're hoping we have a variety so there's something that you like on our table.
That's incredible. And just the whole sort of... the fact that you're raising the animals, you're making the cheese, I love this thing about feeding them the brewing remnants. I mean, what a great thing. And the fact that I had no idea that it was that healthy and good for them too. So because when you look at it, when it comes out of the brewing tank, it isn't always the most beautiful looking thing. So that's great that the goats and cows love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Donna, thank you so much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it and learning more about your dairy and the farm. And so for our listeners and our shoppers, they can come up to your table at the market and enjoy amazing butter, cheese curd, and aged cheeses. So
Yes, thank you so much, Donna.
We look forward to that.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back with Chef Kelly McDonald. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Farmer's Fresh Hour. This is Tia Butts. This is where we go behind the scenes with the farm and the food. And I would love to give a shout out to our very kind sponsors, American Ag Credit, Money for Agriculture, who are responsible for helping to make this show possible and bring the show to all of you in Napa and beyond that are listening. So we are happy to welcome into studio Kelly McDonald. Kelly, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I know you from being the chef on the Napa wine train.
Oh, you mean that other job.
Other job.
That you were there for a few weeks, perhaps.
Just 22 years.
22 years. Yeah. So amazing run, you know, in the restaurant kitchen world. If you're anywhere for a couple of years, that's good. The fact that you were there on your moving kitchen for 22 years is absolutely incredible. So you were the sous chef initially and then worked for a couple of chefs and then became the chef de cuisine?
I worked for Cindy Paulson, and then I moved on from that to a sous chef and purchaser. And then from there, I just kind of waited in line.
Yeah, yeah. You know? You were patient, and you – and I just, for the listeners who haven't been on the wine train, I mean, this is your former job, but you guys did an amazing job there. When you were there, I mean, it was just incredible. The quality of the food that you produced on a kitchen that was moving down the train tracks was, I just was so amazed.
Top notch.
It was just
top
so
notch.
Amazed. So
yeah,
thank you very much. Yeah,
so
I put a lot of pride in that.
22 years was long enough. You decided it was time to go off on your own. You've got several different projects you're working on, but, you know, you're doing all kinds of stuff. I guess we'll let you tell a little bit about it. I mean, I know that on your property you raise quail and quail eggs. Mm-hmm. You have an organic farm that you raise produce there. But on top of that, you are also involved with other things, catering, education,
right?
Food safety. You know, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So the name of my company is Mac Cuisine, and I'm a freelance chef. Personal chef. So I cater to people's needs, but I'm not really a caterer. So what I do is I show up with all the ingredients and make the ingredients there at, in Calistoga at a VRBO or in someone's private estate or winery here in Napa. And so I meet people from all over the world, and I have that personal touch still that I had at my other job. And I really embrace it. And I'm able to really, you know, doing 100,000 customers a year approximately for 22 years.
Yeah.
To be able to really refine my culinary skills and training, 4 years of culinary school. That was a million years ago, but just constantly educating myself. My wife and I own 11-acre ranch up Monticello Road. I married the hottest of three farmer's daughters.
Okay, good. That's always the best idea, I think, probably.
And it's a true story.
Yeah.
And she always wanted a chunk of land, and mm-hmm. she said, you know, someday when we have grandkids, you know, mud pies are on the list. Right. You know, she used to do things like that in the rows. And I've always wanted to have property. So, yeah, we have the quail eggs. I sell them locally. People knock on the door. I meet people from all over. And they're not Eurasian. They're actually, those are my homing dove. But we have, these are Japanese quail. They run 10 degrees hotter as a bird. So there is no salmonella.
Oh, interesting.
And that's why they're great for sushi. They're good raw in a mm-hmm. shake. You want to watch how much. They're very, very high in protein.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a lady from Japan who had her mom here, and she was a heart specialist at UC Davis, and they were coming back over from Queen of the Valley, and she saw my sign, and she knocked on the door, and she was in tears. She goes, my mom is going to go nuts over it. So it's those simple, those simple little things about food. And I know you get this, Craig, because you're exactly the same. With food and people, is that connection of mm-hmm. food and people and what it means to yourself as preparing it,
right.
and the way they receive it. So
right.
doing what I do now, I do the culinary experiences, building the menu to your specs. People say, well, send me 7 menus. Well, I'm happy to do that. But we can work around your price point, and we talk about what you dream about and what you can't stand. And then we build a menu that they're really excited about. So that's a little bit about what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's really cool. And so just back to the farm real quickly, how many quail do you have in your, is it a flock? Is it a covey? What is it?
So they're flight pens.
A flight.
And they're one big, long flight pen. I don't know how many feet. I was just in there cleaning yesterday. I think they're about 30, maybe 40 feet long a piece.
Wow.
But it's about 80 feet, but then there's a door in between.
Right.
So I can put them in one area and clean and not have them sneak out, because they can sneak out.
Yeah.
They're sure. really smart.
Yeah, they are.
They're really smart. And my barn cat's always just waiting for the opportunity.
I bet they probably are.
Yeah, Evie's always, we call her Everest, but Evie is always perched somewhere. And just
near the
in
quail,
case.
Just in case. Yeah. In case. She's just helping out. Perhaps she's hurting. She thinks she's a border collie.
Well, if she could have a sign that said, a quail a week is all I ask.
Yeah, that's right. That's not so good for your business, though, probably.
No, so I would say, to answer your question, I have around 70 right now. And it is going to get a little smaller, because we like to keep the ratio of about a one male to 8 female, just so that everybody's happy and not too crazy in there.
I love it. So tell us more about your business and your specialties and exactly what you're doing.
So I guess the first thing is, if someone wanted to contact you, they could come see you live on stage a week from Saturday. So that's September 8th at 10 o'clock at the Napa Farmers Market on our, we'll call it the culinary stage, culinary events center. How does that sound?
Right. And I really encourage everybody to come. I went last week, was perusing everything, and I've handpicked some things. It's actually the recipes in my cookbook, Chef Kel's Tips and Tastes. And, it's all about kind of ranch living and the simplicity of things being fancy, but not really being fancy. Just using really great things like product like at the farmer's market. So I'm going to be using some cheese. The actual recipe is with Camenzola, but I'm going to show 2 different methods of making this recipe. And I believe in entertaining. You know, I know people listening know what I mean by this, is when you entertain, in a perfect world, you're having as much fun as your guests. And so really, in mac cuisine, in what I believe in is if I do a cooking seminar for people at their home, I call them seminars because I don't have 15 KitchenAids and dough flying all over the place and people with knives running around.
Right.
What I want you to do is have a beer or a glass of wine or a soda, whatever beverage of your choice, and relax and really take it in. And it is somewhat hands-on, because if you said, Chef Kelly, my raviolis blow up, you know, well, I'll show you how to seal them. Greg, come on up and I'll show you how to do this. Mm. I wouldn't have to show you.
Right. But my raviolis do blow up occasionally.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, as do mine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so I want it to be hands-on and really have them walk away with the recipe and their own little notes. And so entertaining, going back to the farmer's market, this is an easy recipe to you can do it at the moment or a little bit ahead. And then when your guests come in, you've got a glass of wine or beer or something in your hand, and you're really enjoying your time with family or dear friends. And
right.
So I hope to see you.
Yeah. You'll be going to be doing this recipe from your book, and you'll be doing two versions of it, one with the cheese curd. Is that right?
Yeah,
from
Ashadia.
We just spoke with them.
Uh-huh.
And then also an aged cheese, and I don't remember what dairy that was.
It starts with a D. I should know this too. Yeah. Shame on us. But
I'm just
going
to put the disclaimer out that nor do I. But
okay.
I was like a little kid in a candy store going around, and I might even throw a few other things in there because there was some killer bacon.
Oh, they're the Contimo provisions bacon. I just had some of that on my camping trip this last
couple
days ago.
I'm going to go camping with you. Yeah. You're eating well when you're camping.
So we might, you might have to have a hook and like pull me off stage, I want to do a couple of different things with this idea that you could even do a salad with.
Well, the record for a cooking demo is 55 minutes. That was set last year by Moro from Grace's Table. So I don't know if that was a long time. I mean,
I don't think
the shortest one was 14 minutes. So somewhere between 14 and 55 is perfect.
I know I'll be a half an hour.
Yeah, so. 30 minutes is great. It'll be between children's story time and one and children's story time too. So that'd be perfect.
Okay. Well, I want to hear a little bit about this cookbook. So what made you decide to write a cookbook, and how can people find it?
Okay.
How can they get it?
So the first part of that, or the last part of that first, is through my website, which is chefkel@maccuisine.com.
Okay.
And you can purchase it through there, and I'll send it to you. I can also sign it to you directly, or just put my name on there. A lot of people like to give them as gifts. And what made me, this is the $50,000 question, what made me do a cookbook is I was tired of my family calling me and saying, hey, Thanksgiving's coming up. How do you do your turkey? Mm. Hey, how do you do a leg of lamb?
Right.
And so I finally just said, you know, I ought to do a cookbook.
Right.
And so that was I actually finished my cookbook about a year and a half before I left my other job.
Okay.
You see the trend.
Yeah.
And so basically, after I did leave the wine train, you know, it was 100% mine. So I've just really enjoyed sharing it with all of my clients. I take it to all my seminars. Sometimes I don't even do a recipe per se out of the book, but I always share the book with people. And so that's
wonderful. Well, thank you. We're so happy you're going to be taking the wonderful ingredients from the market and turning them into something exciting and new for us in a couple of weeks.
And to have a chef with a cookbook, you'll be our second, I think. But Janet Fletcher, who's on our board, also has done some cooking demos this year, and she has a slew of books. And so I think you're our second chef presenter who actually is published.
Yeah, you should bring a stack. You could sign and sell them at the market.
Yeah.
Well, we call it Tips and Taste for a reason, and that is that I've kind of given my philosophy as a chef of, you know, what I do and I don't do and why.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just easy ways of making aioli versus, you know, a real aioli. So I put the disclaimer out there.
Right.
And things like that, so that people can entertain and enjoy good food at the same time.
Perfect. Chef Kelly, thank you so much for coming in the studio today and joining us. And we look forward to 10 a.m. Saturday, September 8th. I think that's the right date.
Yes.
And you're going to be up on the stage in our culinary center It's a sheet of plywood, but anyway, it's pretty fancy. It works, and it's more about just sharing your information, your passion for the food,
sure,
with our shoppers, with the people who are there watching, and in the fact that you're going to be promoting some of our vendors is always exciting. It's neat that people could watch the demo, get the recipe from you, turn around, go down to the stall, the cheese stall, or get some sweet potatoes from one of the vendors, and take it home and make it that same day. It just, you know, it's why we're there. It's the beauty of that. So
exactly.
We appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And that was a very fast hour. I'm realizing we now have to wrap up, but what a fun show and really interesting show, I thought, today.
Well, it was a good show, and our first time back together.
I know. That's why we had so much fun, I think. But we hope everyone comes out to the market this Saturday, September 1st and the 4th. The harvest of the month is apples, so come by the education booth and check that out. We'd like to thank our sponsors, American Ag Credit, Money for Agriculture, and next week, the St. Helena Farmers Market will be back in studio. So we'll see you in a couple.
Right. We'll be there just real quickly with the apple, with the harvest of the month and the apples. Devota Farms has had a variety of apples, and it's just, they're so incredible.
Oh, amazing.
And, you know, we see that, you know, we're losing apple orchards to wine grapes. And I love Pinot Noir, so I'm kind of torn because I love Pinot Noir and I love apples as well. But it's so great that Stan still has, I don't know, a dozen varieties of apples that he brings to the market through this season.
Yeah.
And it's just,
I've been eating
incredible.
One every day.
No, it's just amazing. So he has beautiful flowers, but the apples are just incredible. And so we'll have an apple tasting this week, I think.
Apple tasting. We also have, I believe, on Saturday, September 8th, when Chef Kelly is doing the chef demo, the kids will be doing power play. So they'll be hula hooping with fruits and vegetables. And of course, the ever popular story time takes place each market at 9:30 and 10:30 a.m.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be back here in 2 weeks, 10 a.m., 1440 KVON. But next Thursday, St. Helena Market. And we'll be at the market this Saturday at 8:30.
Yes,
right? That's right. All right. Thanks for joining us. We're going to sign out for now. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Hopefully, we'll see you at the market.
Well, I love the Lone Ranger. And I love that Dennis Law. Him and George Best. He sure knew how to kick a ball. I wanted to be a cowboy. Learn to crack a whip, stand up in that lonely street, to six guns on my hip. Along the mighty Beatles came, and everyone went, ah!
1440 KVON Napa, the voice of Napa Valley sports and news. The Oakland A's return home, the Giants are idle. This is a sports report with Ira C. Smith. Tonight, the Oakland Athletics start a four-game series at home against Seattle. And after that series, the New York Yankees come to town. They